Welcome to the Young Wealth Show, where you'll truly learn how to make, spend, and invest money for an awesome life. Get the real-life stuff that wasn't part of your school curriculum. Young Wealth gives you innovative new ways of dealing with your finances, as well as the skills and tools you're going to need to survive and be successful out on your own. Let the Young Wealth Show be your GPS to take you from clueless to clued in. Here is your host, Jason Hartman, with Young Wealth.
Hey, welcome to the Young Wealth Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman. This show, of course, is produced by my foundation, the Jason Hartman Foundation, where we talk about business and investing and how you can create a great future for yourself and start out on the right path. We'll be back with a great guest for you in just a moment here on the Young Wealth Show. And be sure to visit our website, youngwealth.com, where we've got a fantastic blog, lots of free resources. Take advantage of that and further your financial education. It's my pleasure to welcome Todd Babbitt to the show. He is the author of Millionaire by 28, Real Estate Investing for the Young and Ambitious. Todd, I'm really anxious to hear your story, and I'm sure the listeners are too. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So tell us a little bit about how you got started so young. I mean, my story is like yours, so it's rare, and it's great to see that kind of thing.
Right, yeah. I actually started in real estate back when I was either 23 or 24. I didn't have much money at that time. I was just working for a company, but I always had the desire, you know, to be wealthy. I'd always read a lot of books about success and how to get rich and these kind of things, and I always kept coming back to real estate because that seemed to be the highest percentage chance of making it. You read about more people that were wealthy from real estate than anything else. So I always had an idea to do it, but what gave me the push was I actually bought an apartment. I lived down in the Washington, D.C. area. That's where I grew up. And bought just a little condo just in the D.C. on the line there between Maryland and D.C. And ended up, after a few months of living it, I had been reading some real estate books, and I thought, you know, I'm going to move out of this thing and rent it because it seemed like a pretty rentable apartment. And I did that and ended up making just a little bit of, just a small cash flow, I think $25 a month or something on it. But it rented quickly, and it was a pretty easy process. And I thought, you know, hey, this is maybe I have something here. But from there, I gradually accumulated more properties over the next few years.
And so you bought these properties. Now, where were you located at the time, and where were you investing?
I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area, and mostly in Maryland. But then I actually moved down just around the Maryland, D.C. line and bought that first condo in, I think it was just in D.C., just a little condo in a nice area. It was actually called Chevy Chase. Actually, it was in Maryland, Chevy Chase, Maryland, right on the D.C. line.
And your philosophy is, as far as an investor, what was that? I mean, well, maybe I should first ask, what really made it about real estate? Why did you choose that as your ideal asset class?
When you're younger and you don't have much money, you know, there's not that many choices. It's tough to, make a lot of money in the stock market or something like that if you don't have anything to start with. With the stock market, of course, you can use some leverage, but I think, you know, leverage about 50% of whatever you have. So, real estate is really, I kept coming back to it because, as I mentioned, not only did I read about more people making money from real estate than anything else, but also I think that what causes that is the amount of leverage you can use. You can actually buy a condo or a house with almost 100% financing, if not 100%, and then you can turn around and put a renter in there and have them pay your mortgage for you and all your expenses. So you can end up hopefully breaking even or making a little cash flow. And, I don't know any other way you can borrow so much money and then have someone else, the tenant, pay for it for you.
You get to outsource your debt to tenants. You use very little, sometimes if any, of your own money. You get to outsource your debt to the tenants. You get control. You get tax benefits. I mean, what a great asset class, huh?
Yeah. I mean, there is. I actually listed in my book in one of the chapters all the reasons. I went through it, actually, pretty thoroughly about why I went that route, and it was just, you know, there's 10 or 15 reasons that, you know, including, like you said, the tax reasons, kind of paying your mortgage for you, and, you know, and then you can just accumulate these. I mean, it's not easy, but it's possible to keep accumulating properties, and one of the biggest things, I kept looking at it, you know, as I was accumulating these things pretty aggressively, I kept thinking, all right, worst case situation, you know, 20 or 30 years down the road, even if the rents never went up, which is pretty unlikely, if I just broke even, eventually, all these mortgages would be paid off, and I would be worth you know, a lot of money. That would be the worst case situation, but more likely the rents are going to go up gradually, so I get a pay increase every month or every year, rather, and you know, the values would go up, so I'd eventually have a lot of money.
Absolutely. So what are some of those reasons, if you could kind of outline them for us?
Yeah, as I mentioned, the leverage, the tax savings, I mean, the ability to write off from a tax standpoint. What else was it? I mean, it's easy, actually, when you're not worth very much money, you can, because of all the mortgage products out there, someone with very little means can use different mortgage products to actually get into a home. I mean, someone with almost no money and very low salary can, you know, usually buy a $100,000 property or more. You know, you can also bring co-signers in. There's all different ways. And it's also easy, or not, I shouldn't say easy, but it's not really complicated. I mean, if you read a little bit and you maybe talk to other people, other landlords, things like that, you can figure out how to buy and landlord over a property. It's not like trying to figure out options or futures or, you know, something complicated like that.
Absolutely. So I love the way you just sort of organize these 15 reasons. And I'm looking at page 28 of your book here. You talk about low to moderate investment required, and you covered that because of leverage. Number two, you say it's not really that complicated. It's a serious business. It needs some specialized knowledge, but it's fairly simple, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Like you said, there is ups and downs to it. There's some difficult parts. I mean, sometimes working with tenants isn't always the funnest thing you're going to do, but it's not really difficult. If you're persistent and you apply yourself, then it's manageable.
And then you talked about how you like certainty. What do you mean by that?
A lot of investments, maybe like if you went to buy a business or maybe sometimes in the stock market, depending how you're investing, it's not all that certain, you know, the outcome. But with real estate, typically, you know, if you buy a property in a good area and you buy it at a decent price, I mean, you can already see what it's going to rent for if you look in the paper, do some research. You know, unless there's some major market correction, then you're pretty assured of what's going to happen down the road. At least it's more sure, nothing's certain, but it's more certain than a lot of other investments.
And the other thing about it that's interesting, Todd, is it's fairly slow moving. Investors can make decisions in a pace that's sort of reasonable, whereas with stocks and things like that, it can move pretty quick. And some people love that because there's a lot of liquidity, of course, but it also creates a lot of volatility, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, the stock market is, you really got to know what you're doing have a good plan if you're going to invest in the stock market. If you're not going to be a long-term buy and hold type of person, then good luck to you, because you're really going to have to be on the ball, researching individual companies, keeping track of them, that kind of thing. It can be done, but it's difficult. Real estate, in my mind, real estate is definitely a better fit for the vast majority of people.
That's interesting that you say that, too, because you're kind of referring to, in the stock market world, being a trader. And I don't mean as a professional, like it's your job. I mean, like as an investor. Many people day trade or they just trade frequently. But yeah, you've really got to know what's going on. But then when you look at the sort of the financial services industry that has this, they're always sort of beating the drum to buy and hold investing, right? And I want to believe that, because that is sort of the Warren Buffett mentality. And before we started recording, we both talked about how we like Warren Buffett. But the problem is, if you look at the last 10 years, I mean, in nominal dollars, you're right about where you started 10 years ago in the markets. In real dollars, you've been slaughtered as an investor.
Right.
And I'm one of those. My money, I've had some money in the market, certainly in the stock market. And boy, I just have not been pleased.
Right. You know, a lot of people have been disappointed. I mean, I've been a big follower of the market. I've done a lot of reading on it. I actually talked about you before the phone call. You had a guest on named Rick Edelman, a financial advisor from the Washington, D.C. area. I'm a big reader of his books and things. I think he's pretty much right on with most of his. And, you know, as he says, it's really, you've got to be well-diversified if you're going to go in the stock market. The average person is not buying and selling and trading, that kind of thing. They don't have time for it, and they know that they're going to lose money. So most people that put away their retirement funds or their 401ks or what have you, you need to be well diversified and a long term horizon. And it's true, the last 10 years, I mean, typically, if you look historically, usually over 10 year periods, the market is almost always positive, but it wasn't this time, and it happens. You know, the longer out you go, I think there's never been, I'm not sure, I mean, don't quote me, but I think there's never been a negative 20 year period or possibly 30 years, something like that. But it's, you know, so the longer you go, the safer you are. It just keeps getting safer and safer, but it's true. And I also mentioned to you earlier that I was, you know, I'm a certified financial planner. After I stopped doing real estate, I was always interested in finance, and I went and got my CFP and went to work for Merrill Lynch for a couple years. I'm no longer there, but what I saw when I was there was probably common knowledge, most people, is that the stock market is a great thing if you're diversifying, you do it long term. But what happens almost to most people is they say they're long term, and they say they're going to stay in there through thick and thin. But when things start going down, they get scared, and they take their money out, and then they put it back in after the market's gone back up. So they end up selling way low and buying back high, which is human nature. And that's really the reason, you know, most of the time the stock market doesn't work for people.
I think that's what people do, and there's no question about that, that nature is there. Anything more you want to mention about leverage?
Yeah, actually, I mean, leverage was the key to, back when I was in, and I did all this in the Washington, D.C. area, I can tell you a little bit. What I did was I ended up buying that first condo, and then I ended up gradually, I slowly built up. I bought another one and then another one, and that was the key, was using the leverage, because I didn't have any money. I think maybe I had maybe $5,000 to my name, but I actually used a credit card for my part of my down payment, I think, for the first condo I bought. But it was a unique situation. The market in the D.C. area wasn't very hot then. I mean, it was actually wasn't very advantageous to buy there, and people didn't like it as much. So you could find these cheaper condos that would rent for a decent amount, because you had a lot of young professionals, and D.C. always seemed to have a high rate, you know, a lot of tenants, because they're, you know, the transient area. So anyways, I would find these properties that were, cheaper, but they would cash flow or at least break even. And I would use leverage, you know, to buy another one. I'd have my first one, and then I would show the bank that this was breaking even or having a little cash flow, and I was able to borrow more money to buy the second one and the third one. I mean, that is really the key. I mean, well, actually, the two keys I always found was, first, you got to find properties that will break even or cash flow a little bit, because you don't want to buy too many properties that have a negative cash flow. It's going to be hard to carry them unless you have deep pockets. And also, I guess, and also finding, you know, the leverage, and also finding these properties that would break even. So, you know, the second part is the leverage. Then you have to get good at knowing the exact rules that the banks want, you know, and how to apply for these mortgages. Make sure your papers are in order. I mean, I spent so much time doing that and working relationships with banks. That was the key, you know, to the whole thing.
So appreciation, leverage amplifies appreciation pretty dramatically, and that's one of the great things about it. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the market in general, because it's been so beat up, and it really seems like with your background in financial services, you might have, because you've got sort of the dual background, you might have some thoughts on the real estate market kind of being the last segment to recover. It seems like the stock market has recovered, the precious metals market has obviously done well, and real estate's still kind of hanging out there, and it seems like the last one that you can sort of cherry pick.
Yeah, it's interesting, because actually after I wrote my book back in, I think it was 06, it was actually bad timing, because I think that was right when the market was going down. It had exploded, you know, imploded or whatever you want to call it. And so my book wasn't really that desirable. If it had been a couple years earlier when everyone was super excited, when prices were going through the roof, this would have been a better time. But actually, now is the time actually to read a book like mine or anybody else's that talks about real estate, because now everything's back down again. It's a big cycle. This is an awful cycle, but now is the time to be buying again. When it's just like I think Warren Buffett says something about when everyone is scared, you should be brave, you know, and vice versa.
Yeah, he's great. I'll tell you that quote, because I use it all the time, and I want our listeners to get the benefit of it. Be greedy when everyone is fearful, and be fearful when everyone is greedy. Isn't that a great quote?
Right. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I butchered it, but that's it.
The other one that's really good is J. Paul Getty's quote. He says, buy when everybody's selling, and sell when everybody's buying.
Yeah, I mean, it's true, but that's most people, and you know, myself included, sometimes it goes against everything inside your nature to do, because you're fearful, and to turn around and buy at that time or vice versa, it's very difficult. So, it's hard.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got to have the confidence to do what the opposite of the herd is doing, don't you?
Yeah, and I think that comes with doing it, too. When I was doing the real estate for several years, it was, you get more confident about it, and you get into it, and you realize, you look at the numbers instead of just what people are saying. That's also what's nice about the real estate market, is it's more, like you said, it moves slower, and it's, isn't it great that the real estate market doesn't give you a quote every day?
Like, right. In a way it is, because then people don't get so jittery. It's really for their own good in a lot of ways, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if you bought a condo or a house for $200,000, and then the next day, it was down 10%, you would say, oh my God, I have to sell it. That's what people do in the stock market. With real estate, you know, you don't even notice it, or if you did, you'd say, well, why would I sell it? It's a good piece of property.
And the debt's being paid by the tenant a lot of times, which is your seventh point, which is rental income. But you know what I thought you brought up that was really, really good, Todd, is the aspect of security, your reason number eight. And I think a lot of people don't really see this one, and you pointed that out. It's a good one. You talk about, what if you get injured and you can't work? What do you think about that as it relates to real estate?
Yeah, I like that one. I'm glad you brought it up. That's a great thing. Is if you build up like I did, I actually eventually built up about 50 of these, mostly condos. But I mean, even if you just had, you know, whatever, a nice portfolio of properties, I don't know many other things that if something happened to you, like say you weren't able to go to work every day because you're sick or what have you, that you can pretty simply hire a property manager to take care of your business. It's a very simple business, and there's there's hundreds, if not thousands, of property management companies, you know, in our country that can handle it for you. Some are better than others, but anyways, it can be done. Any other occupation, like even if you own a business, I mean, you know, how long, you know, you could hire someone to take your place in the business, but you probably have to pay them a considerable sum, and, you know, they're How long are they going to be able to manage it like you did?
Yeah, that's right. And the business is so complex and there's so many moving parts that good luck having someone come in and take it. With income property, with a real estate investment, it's a pretty simple asset class. The laws and the customs have been around for thousands of years, really. And the laws vary from city to city, state to state a little bit, but it's basically the same idea. If they don't pay the rent,
right,
you evict them, you collect a security deposit, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to beat it. I mean, if you had some other occupation too, a lawyer, doctor, whatever, I mean, if you can't go to work every day, your business is going to pretty soon, you know, go down. So there's not much like it.
Yeah, very good point. So what else do you want to cover as far as that? You want to go through the rest of the reasons, like the ease of entry? I think that's a pretty interesting one.
For me, I mean, I was just in my low 20s and didn't have much money. I didn't have any special connections or anything else. Like I said, I just bought one property and just went from there, and it gradually built up. So, I mean, you know, if I can do that, I think pretty much anyone with the desire to do it. I mean, it wasn't easy building up that many properties, and I was really focused on it, and really, I mean, I spent a lot of time doing it. I was very passionate about it, but it can be done. Any average person could even, you know, buy just two or three properties, and they can maintain their same occupation. And, you know, if you just buy two or three properties or maybe $200,000 or $300,000 each, you know, down the road, 20, 30 years from now, you're going to have probably $1 million for your retirement, and it's not guaranteed, but it's, you know, if you manage them well and are responsible about it, it's almost guaranteed.
Limited formal education required. Boy, I tell you, Todd, I hear so many stories and know so many people that are, I don't mean this to sound wrong or snobbish or anything like that, but they're kind of simple people, yet they've made a fortune in real estate, haven't they?
Right.
They're not Ivy League, highly educated people, that kind of thing.
No, it's true. And actually, you know, to make the point more is I actually had dropped out of college that time. I had started, but then dropped out, and I didn't go back for several years. I did complete my degree, but during that whole time when I was making a lot of money with this real estate, I didn't have a college degree. I just wanted to make money, and I was aggressive about it. And anybody can do it if they have the you know, the passion to do it. It does take a lot of work, but I think that, you know, down the road, for the amount of money and the business you can build up, is worth the effort.
So there, I think you covered point number 11 on limitless potential. Number 12 is you talk about being your own boss.
Yeah, I mean, I got up to about 50 properties, and I could have, you know, done more. The market kept going up, so I decided to stop buying because I couldn't find anything that would break even with a lot of leverage. So it just kind of stopped itself. But yeah, at that point, I had about 50 properties, and I was living down in Washington, D.C., and the mostly condos were, you know, spread among the city there in several different buildings, and I was just managing it all myself. I thought if I kept going that, you know, probably got around 100 or something, I would probably have to hire an assistant, but, you know, it would be pretty simple to do. So it was great being your own boss. You know, you wake up when you want and do what you want, as long as, you know, you cover all your responsibilities.
No employees required. I think that's a big one. So many people dream of being in their own business, but boy, when you compare tenants to employees and the complexity and the attention required and the problems that could occur, I say tenants are a lot easier.
Right. Yeah. No, it's true. Yeah, I mean, I've often thought about, you know, buying a business, and I've never really found the right one. And I think a lot of times it's because I came from that background when it was nice being your own boss. And sometimes I look at a lot of the businesses, it's, you know, it's a lot of headaches. You're dealing with a lot of employees and a lot of different moving parts. And and it's not quite as simple as real estate.
No question about it. Now, tax benefits are really interesting when it comes to income property. I've always thought that it's just the most tax-favored asset in America, bar none, because of the way the government sort of accounts for the asset. Talk just a little bit about taxes and why you liked it so much from that aspect.
The way it worked, it's been a few years, but I'm not sure if the rules are exactly the same. I think they are. The IRS lets you deduct the depreciation. So, you divide the cost of the property.
By 27 and a half years, yeah.
27 and a half years, yeah. And then you get to deduct that portion. So on a $100,000 property, it might have been like $3,000 or $4,000. And then you get to actually deduct that on your tax return against your, if you have a job and you made income, you actually get to take that $3,000 or $4,000 right off your income. So you end up paying less taxes on your income from your job, even though, the government lets you depreciate it. I mean, the value of the property really isn't depreciating typically, but it's just a little benefit that they give you. And every year you get to do that. Got to the point where I actually had enough properties that I was barely paying any tax on the occupation I had. I was, working for a company as well part of this time, I think up until I had 15 or 20 properties. So I actually was ending up paying almost no tax. So it was nice.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Couple distinctions I want to make there is, number one, they don't allow you to depreciate the value of the land. So it's only the improvement or the building that's sitting on the land. So if that value is 100,000, you divide it by 27.5 if it's a residential type property and get that benefit. And then the other thing listeners should know, and I just want to be really clear because I don't want people to run out and make a mistake, is that that deduction opportunity does phase out as your income goes above $100,000. So there are some limitations on it. Talk to your CPA, your tax advisor, and then of course legal questions, talk to an attorney. We just always want to make that kind of disclaimer there. But your last reason that you mentioned, Todd, is just enjoyment. You just liked it, didn't you? And that's why you were so successful at it at such an early age.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I like building something, which is fun to, I kind of became like a goal to get to 50 properties or whatever number was current thing. And then I enjoyed finding these properties, kind of like the hunt a little bit. It was nice. I'd always scan the multiple listings and see what came on. I started to get a little niche. I was buying these small condos in the city in good upscale areas. Those were the ones that rented real fast for higher dollars. And so as soon as I'd see one come on the multiple listing, I got my real estate license so I could just go in with the little lockbox key and go look at it myself and, make a quick decision. And it was fun to hunt for these properties. And then once you found them, wasn't quite as much fun as finding them, but, then you submit all your mortgage paperwork and all that. And it was a little bit of a challenge to get that through, dealing with, once you have a lot of properties, you're dealing with a lot of different banks. So it was a challenge to build this whole little mini empire of properties and, to get them rented up and to, keep increasing it. So it was fun. I liked it when it happened. I was disappointed when it's funny. It's like, it's nice that the market went up after I owned a bunch of, all these properties. And then not soon after, the market started going up pretty dramatically. Even though it was nice that the value of my properties I owned were going up, it was a little disappointing that I couldn't continue because the prices were getting so unrealistic that, by the time you bought it with a mortgage and then tried to put a tenant in there, the rent didn't pay the mortgage anymore. So I had to I just had to stop. So it was a little disappointing that I couldn't keep building this little mini thing.
Rents always lag appreciation. That's pretty much the way it always bears out in every market. And that's why nowadays, a lot of people are really looking at investing in real estate from a non-local perspective, because they may just not happen to live in the right place where it really makes sense to invest. For example, I live in California, and it hasn't made sense to invest here for years, and it still doesn't. Still just not a prudent place to invest. And the other thing you get with that is diversification. And certainly, you'll speak to that from your financial services background. You guys are always saying diversify, right?
Right, yeah, definitely in the stock market. I think, again, that's what Buffett says something about. If you don't know what you're doing, then, go buy an index fund. Don't pick individual stocks. Yeah, diversify as much as you can if you don't know what you're doing. Yeah, no, I mean, definitely it would, be nice to buy, properties in different locations as long as you, have somebody competent to be able to take care of them.
What did you do in terms of commercial property? You have a chapter on waterfront and commercial property.
Oh, yeah, well, actually, after I bought, I was managing for a few years and bought a portfolio of about 50 of these condos downtown in D.C., as the market went up, I ended up selling out of them, which happened pretty quickly because, how ridiculous that market was. And so then I ended up taking most of my earnings and moving down to Naples, Florida, and I got involved. I had an uncle that lived down here for years, and he was always buying down Naples, and it's a real nice area, and it's always been it was appreciating for 15 or 20 years or more, and so I just thought I would sink a bunch of money into just housing lots out there. There's a lot of empty housing lots, and they've been appreciating nicely over the years, and you know that I guess the market followed me down here because it, just by luck at this point was they were appreciating so fast. They ended up sort of starting to. I wanted to be a long-term investor as I had been, but I started almost flipping these things. I'd hold them about a year, and they'd go up so much, I sold them, and I went from just the housing lots to there was some commercial lots all around Southwest Florida here, and I'd started doing a little bit of commercial, and then some waterfront housing lots up in Cape Coral, Florida, and that was really mostly due to the market being so hot. I just found all these new areas were popping up that kept appreciating, so I kind of fell into it. I haven't actually done any commercial with tenants, just all raw land I did down here in Florida.
And one of the other things that you talk about is, and I'll just say the old saying first, which I completely agree with, and the old saying is, I'd rather be lucky than good. And you have a chapter on that. Am I good or am I just plain lucky? Which one are you? And which one would you rather be?
Well, I say in there that the market, this unprecedented appreciation we had in the last, several years before the down cycle, you think, well, was I just lucky doing this? And I looked at it and I thought, well, I kind of made myself lucky because I accumulated these 50 plus properties. So I put myself in a position, obviously if I didn't own any real estate and the market had gone up, it wouldn't have done much for me. But I had bought these properties and I intended to hold them, be a landlord all my life for 20 or 30 years. But then the market started going up and up and up. So I said, you know what, maybe I'll try something else. I'm going to, I don't know if I want to manage tenants and toilets, for the rest of my life. So let me sell out now while that going's good and move on to something else. So I worked hard to get in there. I was probably fortunate that the market escalated so soon after I accumulated so many properties. But, so I guess it was hard work and a little bit of luck.
One thing also I want to mention, because you mentioned that you did your liquidity event, you sold them, is that comparing income property to stock market type investments or really any other investments, one of the other big tax benefits is if you stay in the game, you can do 1031 tax deferred exchanges and trade your assets through your whole lifetime and defer the gain indefinitely. And then if you have children under current law, and I'm not a tax expert, but I'll just give you the concept. So check out anything I say always. The basis steps up to market value at the time you die. So, wow. I mean, you get to trade it all your life and never pay tax. Whereas if you trade stocks, even if you stay in the game, say you make money, which is a huge assumption in the first place, but say you're lucky and you do well, and you've got to pay your capital gains tax on every trade. There's no 1031 tax deferred exchange.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that the stock market is really, it's sort of a secondary investment vehicle for people after they've already made their money. I mean, there's all these books and movies and everything about people making all this money in the stock market, but most people are not originating their wealth in the stock market and not from scratch. I mean, if you look at the people that make a lot of money, I mean, there's not too many Warren Buffetts. Most of the people are hedge fund managers, mutual fund managers, things like that, and they're using other people's money. They were an employee.
They're all insiders. They're all insiders, all those people.
So it's really, I mean, I think the stock market is a secondary vehicle. It's most people that make large-scale wealth or small-scale wealth, whatever, are either business owners or real estate investors or lawyers, doctors, that kind of thing, and then or some kind of profession like that. And then they have excess funds that they can't funnel back into their business, or they don't want to. They want something more passive, and then they'll go invest, in the stock market. But I mean, it's very small, the number of the people that truly say, oh, I'm going to get rich through the stock market, and I'm not going to, go run a mutual fund or hedge fund. I'm just going to take my own money I'm just going to make a lot of money off of it like that. I mean, I almost never have heard of anybody.
I have yet to hear one story, and I know lots of people. I got lots of friends on Facebook, lots of people in real life, and I know lots of them that say they've really created some nice wealth with real estate, but I don't know any of them that have done it with stocks. And when I occasionally hear that, like in my for-profit business, my seminars, I'll ask asked that question, and occasionally a hand will go up, and the story is always this one. This is the only story I ever hear. It is, well, someone started a business, and then they sold out either with a private placement memorandum, or even they got the business to the size where they actually went public. Well, again, that's not investing in stocks. That's being an insider. That's running a business. If you didn't take it public, you could have just sold the business and made the money that way. So anyway, one final question for you, Todd, and I really want to know what you mean by this question, because you have a chapter entitled, Do You Really Want to Be Rich, or Are You Just Saying That? And I ask you that because that's a great question. I think people really, they kind of just say that type of thing, but they may not be willing to pay the price. They may not really even mean it in the first place. They may not necessarily be happier with a lot of wealth. We've seen wealth kind of destroy people that aren't equipped to handle it. Lottery winners are a great example. What do you mean when you say that?
Yeah, I think a lot of people, everybody says they want to be rich, I guess, or most people do. But then there's that second level, people that actually talk about it a lot, and even people that have read my book and they'll talk to me about it, and then they don't really do much. You know, they probably just need to realize that, it takes some hard work to make, if you want massive results, you're probably going to have to do, massive amount of work. I mean, there's strange cases where you win the lottery or something, but most of the time you're going to have to. So I think there are people that are more just talking about it. And I guess in that chapter, I actually talk a little bit about, it's just surprising how little people want to do, not everyone, but a lot of people that say they want to be wealthy. Because I remember when I was down in Florida here, and I was the land was just appreciating like crazy. I mean, it was kind of ridiculous during that phase. It wasn't even healthy for the economy, but it was, anyways, it was. And I would tell a few people about it, some friends and family and things. And I even offered to send them information about it. I said, you should probably buy a lot or two. They were incredibly cheap down here too. I mean, you could get into for $5,000. You could even borrow money. And I was saying, you might just want to do something. It's really been going well, and I don't see it petering out. But of course, I'm not a genius, and I didn't expect them just to take my word for it. But I offered to send them information to show them what's going on a little bit. Maybe they want to take a peek at it. And I'd say it's probably 9 out of 10 people, at least, or more than that, would just say, oh, okay, yeah, and you never heard from them again. So I mean, even when I had this track record, which they knew of doing pretty well, and I wasn't pushing anything on them or anything, I was just basically, I don't even know why I was doing it. Maybe I just like to help out my friends or something. But they didn't even want to even take a look at any research or anything. So I think a lot of people do a lot of talking, but when it comes down to it, they're busy. And maybe they're even just happy with their life, but maybe they're just, just something to say that they want to be wealthy.
Very good point. Well, Todd, what would you like to say to people in closing about becoming a young millionaire, about investing, about finance, whatever it is? And where can they get the book, too?
Oh, yeah, my book is it's on Amazon.com, just under my name, Todd Babbitt, or Millionaire by 28. And I would just maybe close by saying that, real estate is an excellent way for younger people or anybody. I think it's probably the best way. I don't know of a better way. It's not guaranteed, but, when I started out, I wanted something with the highest percentage chance of becoming wealthy. And I looked at everything. I go through a chapter in there. I looked at everything. And my conclusion was that the highest percentage chance, it wasn't going to be instantaneous. It was actually going to take longer than a lot of other things possibly. But it had the highest possibility of me becoming wealthy. And I had a trade-off. I had other friends that were going out. Maybe they went to, they became a professional in something. So they were making a lot of money right then, or a decent amount. I was buying these little properties and making $25 cash flow if I was lucky per month. So, if I had 10 of them, I was making $250 a month, big deal. But I knew down the road, these things, the rents were going to keep going up and the values, and I was going to have a high assurance level of having a lot of money down the road. So I was foregoing the easy money up front for the big payoff down the road. And I think if you want the highest percentage chance of becoming wealthy, and you don't have much means right now, you can't go out and buy a business or do other things, then I'd say real estate's the way to go.
Good stuff. Well, Todd Babbitt, thank you so much for sharing with us today. The book is Millionaire by 28, Real Estate Investing for the Young and Ambitious, available on Amazon.com. And we appreciate your insights. Congratulations on your success.
Thank you.
Copyright the Hartman Media Company. For publication rights and interviews, please email media@jasonhartman.com. This show offers very general information concerning real estate for investment purposes. Opinions of guests are their own. Jason Hartman is acting as president of Platinum Properties Investor Network exclusively. Nothing contained herein should be considered personalized, personal, financial, investment, legal, or tax advice. Every investor's strategy and goals are unique. You should consult with a licensed real estate broker or agent or other licensed investment, tax, and/or legal advisor before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed. Please call 714-820-4200 and visit www.jasonhartman.com for additional disclaimers, disclosures, and questions.